Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and once again, welcome to Chicago. Before I deliver the annual report, Urbe et Orbe, of the Philadelphia Society, as a Chicagoan, I would like to note the extraordinary lengths to which we of this city went in order to provide an excellent illustration of the superiority of the private sector over the public sector in the immediate run-up to this meeting. The municipal inspectors responsible for the maintenance of the freight tunnel system that runs under the streets of Chicago very nearly accomplished their tasks of timely detection of the impending problem. One of the inspectors, whose job it was to view the site, omitted to do so for the good public sector reason that that day he couldn't find a convenient place to park. As Forrest McDonald would say, I'm not making that up. And the other inspector actually went down in the tunnel, saw the problem, took photographs of it, then took the film to his corner drugstore and forgot to pick it up for another week or two, and so forgot to report it to his superiors. Well, in any event, we gather here for the 28th annual meeting of the Philadelphia Society, 27 years, virtually a full generation after this institution was founded in Chicago to carry the torch of liberty through what seemed to be very dark times when not only we were fighting the worldwide battle against communism, but also within the Western world, the great battle against excessive statism. The very question now that our president, Dan Oliver, has framed for this year's meeting, now that communism is dead, must we still say, long live the state? That's the business of this meeting, but the business of this meeting also ought to be in part to celebrate the collapse of the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik experiment, of Marxist-Leninist ideology, and of what Ronald Reagan properly called the evil Soviet Empire. And by way of a special Philadelphia Society celebration of the collapse of the Soviet Union, I have a rare treat for you today. Thanks to Ron Robinson of Young America's Foundation, who has many, many contacts throughout the world and has lately been recruiting former agents of the KGB into YAF, particularly because they have absolutely nothing else to do, we have been able to obtain from the files of the KGB the dossier of the KGB on the Philadelphia Society. Now, this has never been seen before. It's never been opened. The seal, as you can see, is still unbroken. It says here, Philadelphia Society. And for those of you who can read Russian, you can clearly see this says, Top Secret. And of course, there is the emblem of the KGB, the hammer and sickle. And so now, without further ado, I shall break the seal, and we shall all hear what the KGB compiled these last 27 years about the Philadelphia Society. I expect, by the way, that this document is written in Russian. But the good news is, thanks to my American public education, I can read Russian. It's not that my foreign language teachers were particularly good. It's that in the 1960s, my American public school teachers wanted us all to learn Russian. By the way, I don't know how many of you happened to be at that meeting of the Philadelphia Society a decade or two ago when Ernst von den Haag was president. and Ernst invited as a special speaker to the Philadelphia Society, you may remember him, Professor Pablo von Schmalzberg-Pronskevichute, who after being introduced by Ernst, began his remarks by saying, "I am Professor Dr. Pablo von Schmalzberg-Pronskevichute. I am speaking 43 different languages, English the best." Well, I, if memory serves me correctly, Ernst, he was first cousin of Erich Maria von Ritter von Kuhnelt, the dean. Well, let's begin the memorandum. It's dated August 1991. So this is very fresh and at the end of the Soviet Empire. Memorandum for the chairman, Committee on State Security. That's the KGB. From Shmuel Donaldovich. That's Sam Donaldson. Imagine Sam Donaldson, a Russian. I always thought he looked like a Vulcan. Resident officer, KGB station, Washington. Subject, the main enemy's living brain uncovered. A report on the Philadelphia Society. Comrade chairman, the handwriting is on the wall, and it is clear that the party and the great socialist motherland are doomed. Scholars will undoubtedly debate for decades to come whether this was brought about by maladministration of the party and the USSR, or by the external pressures imposed by our capitalist enemies, from containment in the 1940s to Ronald Reagan's Star Wars and economic defiance. The reality is surely a combination of both, but coupled with yet a third factor that has thus far escaped our attention and that of liberal scholars and journalists in the West, that ideas have consequences and that some ideas are fundamental and permanent things, while others are transient and in the end have no strength unless bolstered by instrumentalities of terror. So far, this is pretty accurate. So often, of course, politicians in the West have no ideas. I am reminded, with all due respect to the biographer of the late Herbert Hoover, George Nash, who's here, that upon the death of Calvin Coolidge, H.L. Mencken wrote in an obituary comparing Coolidge with the world savers who preceded him, especially Woodrow Wilson, omitting Harding, and the world savers who followed him, Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt. Mencken bestowed upon Cal Coolidge the highest praise that Mencken reserved for a politician. He was a man of no ideas and not a very great nuisance. In any event, so often, of course, politicians in the West have no ideas, or only soft ideas, or only those ideas that we have paid them to have. It is astonishing that principles of individual conscience and freedom and doctrines of free markets and private property have survived so long, even when the politicians of the West have ignored, misunderstood, or distrusted them. We in the great socialist motherland have tried but failed to explain the persistence of Western ideals. It is as if some invisible hand was protecting them. How ironic then that in the face of the KGB's imminent failure in its role as the sword and shield of the party, I should finally stumble on to the key to the success of the West. It turns out, he writes here, that there exists an institution, a very, very secret organization, that has functioned for a generation now as the spider at the center of the American web, perpetuating these hostile ideas. Cloaked in a threefold veil of secrecy, it is called the Philadelphia Society. A clever name. It would lead us to search for it in eastern Pennsylvania. But in fact, its plenums are held in many cities, and usually in Chicago. And its world headquarters is buried deep in the provincial hinterland, in a place called North Adams, Michigan, where it is sandwiched between a hardware store and the North Adams Grill. And it is disguised as a cheap junk and used paper store. If you've ever been there, you know exactly what I mean. The general secretary of the Philadelphia Society appears to be a retired naval officer with the rank of commodore. He is descended from a long line of Spanish nobles and is called Don Lipset. Other prominent members and founders of the society have included the notorious capitalist rogues Buckley, Friedman, Hayek, Coase, Hutt, Meyer, John Howard, and Rogge, as well as the impenetrably mystical philosophers Russell Kirk and Gerhard Niemeyer, and the merely impenetrable George Cahill. Other prominent members include the militarist lawyer Meese, and the multi-talented political operative called Divine, whose career has included episodes as an academician, as the head of the U.S. Civil Service, and as a beloved transvestite actress. Can somebody please perform the Heimlich maneuver on... One member of this society is believed to have supplied the model for the great fictional spy, created by Ian Fleming and personified by Sean Connery and Roger Moore. Rather a dapper dandy, he is a notorious ladies' man and a finicky epicure, demanding, for example, that his martinis be shaken, not stirred. He is singularly well-informed about the Soviet Union and intelligence matters, yet he has no visible means of support. He is given to standing in the middle of large open rooms and introducing himself dramatically at gatherings by saying, "My name is Beichmann, Arnold Beichmann." Another member of the Philadelphia Society, Tim Ferguson, the vicious anti-communist polemicist for the Wall Street Journal, has been unmasked as the grandson of the late Jewish anti-Bolshevik activist Abraham Goldberg-Shevkovsky. The Goldberg-Shevkovsky family name apparently changed when Abraham Goldberg-Shevkovsky, fleeing the glorious October Revolution, arrived at Ellis Island in New York. When the immigration officer asked Goldberg-Shevkovsky what name he wanted on his papers, Goldberg-Shevkovsky could not immediately remember the anglicized name that he had been told had been adopted by family members who had arrived before him. Muttering to himself in Yiddish, which of course is very close to German, he said, "Ich vergessen." And so the immigration officer wrote down Ike Ferguson, and that was that. Actual activities and operations of the society are shrouded in mystery. They would have you believe that all they do is hold meetings to talk about great ideas. They have many strange rituals. One of them is to gather annually to hear someone say, Lou Euler, Lou Euler, Lou Euler. The president of the Philadelphia Society is Daniel Oliver, the same capitalist agent we first encountered in Paris some 2 years ago, brought to our attention by reports of a dreadful scene in his hotel room one morning when he apparently severed a major artery while shaving. One of our agents who went to the scene shortly after Oliver departed to seek treatment reported that Oliver's blood bathed the whole grisly scene, with the entire bathroom, walls, mirror, sink, towels, floor, carpet, area rug, solid gold fixtures, sunken bathtub, television set, stereo system, and fireplace, drenched in brilliant blue. His term of office ends next April. That would be now. It is reliably reported that he will be succeeded by Paul Leonard Liggio, a retired sumo wrestler who... distressed at the levels of violence to which sumo wrestling has ascended, together with other retired sumo wrestlers, including Mel Bradford, founded the Institute for Humane Sumo. Also retiring in April of 1992 will be First Vice President Hill, whose first name is W, whose second name is W, and whose nickname is Dub. Second Vice President Hugh C. Newton, a rabid right-wing polemicist. And Trustee Jacqueline E. Schaefer. Schaefer is a particularly dangerous enemy operative. She is Assistant Secretary of the Navy, a post once held by Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It is strongly rumored that she may also aspire to the presidency of the United States, although her expected campaign may be derailed by serious character flaws. She is beset with rumors that she never evaded the draft, never consumed marijuana, never descended to drunken stupors, and never philandered. These are deep negatives in U.S. presidential elections. Because they deny a candidate a much-needed bond of self-identification and shared experiences with members of the all-important news media. Continuing as trustees after the 1992 meeting will be Melvin E. Bradford, gone on from sumo wrestling to a career as a male ballet dancer. Ronald E. Burr, a descendant of Vice President Aaron Burr, who to this day refuses to carry $10 bills in his wallet. Edwin J. Fulner, Jr., whose name is pronounced by Rogue Buckley as Fulner, whom many believe to be pseudonymous with another right-wing polemicist, Burton Yale Pines, especially since it has been a very long time since they have been seen in the same room at the same time. Other rumors that Fulner and Pines are the same sides of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde character have yet to be scientifically confirmed. Samuel T. Francis, the H.L. Mencken of the late 20th century, Caroline M. Hemphill, the mischievous New York tycoon who personally undermined the fortune of Donald Trump, Thomas J. Bray, one of the last remaining troglodyte journalists in the American Midwest, Linda Bridges, the little person at the controls behind the curtain when William F. Buckley Jr. plays Wizard of Oz. T. Kenneth Cribb Jr., the Stephen A. Douglas of South Carolina. William H. Kelly, the mayor of a major metropolis in New York State who was responsible for blocking the presidential aspirations of Mario Cuomo. And Roger Pilon, who is unrelated to the pylons that caused the great Chicago flood. Joining the Board of Trustees at the 1992 meeting are expected to be Dwight D. Murphy, who was named after Adlai Stevenson, David E.T. Somerville, a capitalist agent operating in Canada and suspected of undermining the regime of Pierre Elliott Trudeau by giving the former Prime Minister the nickname of Pet, James Taylor, who has seen fire and he has seen rain, and Joseph A. Morris, about whom absolutely nothing is known. Expected to become first vice president at the 1992 meeting is the aforementioned Cribb, who may thereupon become the Napoleon of South Carolina. And predicted to become second vice president is the aforementioned Linda Bridges, whose main mission will probably be to keep an eye on Cribb. Commodore Lipsett and his running dog economist, David Sturr, are expected to remain in their permanent sinecures as respectively secretary and treasurer of the society. It is reported, by the way, that Sturr became an economist because he did not have the personality to be an accountant. I think they got that professionally backwards. I predict that the April session will also see the following persons elected as trustees to join the Philadelphia Society Board for three-year terms beginning in 1993. Margot Carlyle, Lowell Smith, Charles Kessler, Gene Meyer, and Peter Brimelow. More on these individuals will be forthcoming after further investigation. It is worth noting, however, that Eugene Meyer, the executive director of the Federalist Society, the national organization of anti-lawyer lawyers, is the son of the late Frank Meyer, a founder of the Philadelphia Society. These are the people, and this is the organization, that have defeated the Marxist-Leninist dream. And I learned all this only yesterday, and only by accident. I was in Chicago looking for opportunities to commit sabotage against the U.S. economic infrastructure. I was exploring opportunities in the freight tunnels that lie under the streets and river of the city, when ahead in the darkness I saw two men in conversation. I crept up stealthily behind them and they never detected me. I immediately discerned that they were lawyers because their business cards were, in the peculiar custom of American lawyers, spilling out of their pockets. One of them was working busily with pick and shovel, clearly trying to create a small hole in the bulkhead of the tunnel where it crossed underneath the river. I learned from his card that his name was Daniel Hales. This could be the same Daniel Hales, who is the permanent assistant secretary of the Philadelphia Society. The other lawyer was all talk and no work. While Hales was apparently setting the stage for billions of dollars of tort litigation and legal fees, his companion stood by idly, chattering, I think is this word, all the while disclosing all the information contained in this report. I never learned his name, but I will never forget his grating voice, his stout frame, or his Adam Smith bow tie. Well, that concludes the dossier of the Committee on State Security on the Philadelphia Society. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to you the former General Counsel of the Department of Education, the former Chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, currently a distinguished fellow at Citizens for a Sound Economy, and the incumbent and ever outgoing President of the Philadelphia Society, Daniel Oliver.